Welcome back to another episode of the Gene Smith Podcast, where we sit down each month to speak with the Ohio State Senior Vice President and Wolf Foundation Endowed Athletics Director to talk about the current state of OSU athletics. This is episode number 4. My name is Ben Waite, and I am joined, as always, by our leader, Mr. Gene Smith. In this episode, we will be discussing the recent updates regarding student-athlete name, image, and likeness opportunities. Gene, welcome back. How are you doing?
Doing great, Ben. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Happy to be here, and we'll dive right in. Before we start talking about name, image, and likeness, Give us a little update on what's going on at OSU right now.
Yeah, we're fortunate. Obviously, we're deep into our fall season and actually getting ready to start up our winter sports, and basketball has started, and really excited about what our fall sports have accomplished. Soccer, men and women are wrapping up their seasons and getting ready for tournament play, as well as field hockey. And then, of course, our football program is off to a roaring start, and we're hosting the Big Ten Championships in men's and women's cross country. And so our fall sports are rocking and rolling towards the end, and getting ready to get into the winter sports, wrestling and gymnastics and all those other sports. So excited about it.
Our busy schedule is about to get even
busier.
Yeah,
here we go.
Yep. So the topic receiving a lot of national attention right now is student-athlete name, image, and likeness, or NIL. Could you just tell our listeners, at the core, what is NIL and what does it consist of?
Yeah, name, image, and likeness is really the effort to try and allow our student-athletes to monetize their persona. And so as they develop recognition, as they develop a persona, how can they take advantage of that and go and monetize it in some form or fashion? And that's the discussion our membership will have from now until April of next year. But that's really the basis of the core of what it is.
Awesome. And you were a member of the working group for the NCAA task to look into NIL. Who else was on that working group, and how did that process go for you guys?
Yeah, I was an idiot. I agreed to do this. it's a very complex issue, but it is a service to our association and ultimately service to the student athletes we serve. We had a diverse group. This is an association-wide working group, meaning the NCAA is made up of Division I, II, and III. There's a little over 1,100 schools that are represented in that membership. So we were discussing this issue in a holistic manner across all divisions, across all schools. So we had presidents, commissioners, athletic directors, faculty reps, students, significant student engagement. There was 3 students on our committee. So we had a broad, diverse group, and so our focus was across all divisions, not just Division I.
It's great. And how long did the process take? What was your guys' timeline like?
Yeah, we started in May and had a number of in-person meetings and a number of teleconferences, had some testimonies from people in person, different organizations, and we had a panel of students that was phenomenal. I never thought I'd have an opportunity to meet an influencer in the digital space, and I learned a lot about social media, the digital space, and what an influencer is, and so that was a great experience. And then we created a portal for people to submit their ideas or recommendations, and we had over 40 different submissions. We from different organizations, coaches groups, the Drake Group, which is an interest group in around intercollegiate athletics, and some other private entities, and so just a great deal of feedback from people that we're able to vet and roll into our discussions as we talked about issues, and so it was a very inclusive process. But a lot of conference calls and a lot of communication between the members.
I'm still not quite sure what an influencer is. Maybe after we get done with the recording today, you can tell me what that
wife.
Is. Exactly.
Right,
she absolutely knows.
She's an influencer.
They're the one that tell her all the close to buy. So we're fortunate today to be joined by Scott Beardby from the NCAA. He's the Vice President of Legal Affairs and General Counsel for the NCAA. Mr. Beardby became the Vice President of Legal Affairs and General Counsel in August of 2016 after serving various legal positions in the NCAA's national office since January of 19. So we'll bring Scott into the conversation now. And Scott, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Happy to be with you.
And Scott, when did the NCAA first make the request to the 19-person working group?
Yeah, so as Gene said, we here at the national office play a role in issue spotting, trends and issues around the country for the membership. And so the introduction of a federal piece of legislation along the same time frame as the California legislation that ultimately became law here a few months ago led to the creation of the working group by our highest governing body, the Board of Governors. And so those are a variety of presidents and other highly informed individuals to form the working group in order to understand the federal and state implications of the pieces of legislation, and then ultimately to look at whether there should be further study about name, image, and likeness given, given that legislative interest.
And you mentioned that there are a couple of different bills proposed around the country right now that include legislation regarding name, image, and likeness. How do these current bills compare to previous cases that the NCAA has encountered regarding NIL?
Well, the legislation, most notably California, but now we have seen more than 20 states, either an individual state legislator or groups of state legislators indicate that they too were going to seek similar legislation, and then likewise some congressional interest, further congressional interest into the issue. What's interesting is, the issue of name, image, and likeness from an NCAA perspective had been limited because the nexus to, what is athletic participation, what is sort of the compensation that an amateur college athlete receives, and how do you differentiate that from a professional athlete and what a professional athlete is able to do. And so there are cases where the NCAA has been involved that focused on the athletics participation side of things, the compensation that one should be able to receive and still not be a professional, or put another way, not be an employee. And so those cases have been and continue to ongo. What makes the name, image, and likeness case a bit different, or the legislation different, is to some extent it focuses on compensation, monetization that is more distant from athletics participation. So it may be that it's an independent initiative that an athlete has a better idea of another talent. And our rules were written in such a way that those uses of name, image, and likeness were more limiting than necessary, perhaps. And so this was an opportunity to evaluate and for the working group that Gene chaired to make recommendations to open that up a bit without going into and considering student athletes as employees, or for compensating them, monetizing them, if you will, for their performance on the field.
Fantastic. And you mentioned that there are some current cases as well that that might play a role in this or impact the end policies that are put in place. What current cases is the NCAA dealing with right now that might impact NIL?
Yeah, so there really have been, sort of two threads, right? And they're brought by people who believe that the college system should go to a full pay-for-play system, a full employment system. So consistently, the NCAA has won cases where the theory is that student athletes are employees, and That's just in the law has always been on the side of the of student athletes not being employees. And in fact, you're seeing virtually all state legislators and even the congressional representatives who've spoken about this say they don't want student athletes to be employees. So I don't know that you'll see any impact there, given that the Board of Governors specifically said nothing here in this space involving name, image, and likeness should trigger employment. The other theory that's been brought is that, you know, the NCAA's rules about athletics participation compensation are in violation of antitrust laws, and I won't get into all of that, but except to say that we have had courts on, when it comes to athletics participation, say where the rules are right now for a student athlete to receive room, board, books, tuition, and cost of attendance, the gap that exists to allow you to be successful as a student, that's the permissible limit. And we think that this name, image, and likeness issue shouldn't have any impact on those rules because they're different rules. What we're really talking about here would not be pay for play as these cases have advocated for over the last decade or so.
And the working group that Gene was sitting on recently presented their findings. Now that the NCAA has processed those findings, what are the next steps for the NCAA?
So the Board of Governors, again, the board that charged this working group to come forward with recommendations, took a very important step this week by agreeing with the recommendations that there should be change to our rules to allow for student athletes to be more like the regular student body in their opportunities to use name, image, and likeness for their benefit. And so that's a decision that has obviously received a lot of attention. Where we will then focus is the meat of the recommendations, which is how do we do this without disrupting the collegiate experience for the student athlete. And so over the next 6 months, roughly, we will be engaged with our membership schools and coaches and student athletes and presidents and athletic directors and all of our constituencies to figure out how to implement that in a way that's responsible, that allows for clear rules that don't allow for those to unduly influence a young person with name, image, and likeness opportunities in order to pick a certain school, as an example. So we have more work to do in terms of refining recommendations with the goal then that over the next 6 months we can really add some concreteness to the very important guidelines, principles, and the overall framework that we're going to use to decide what activities should be allowed and where other activities may need to be regulated.
And you mentioned not wanting to compromise the student-athlete experience, and what sort of issues might arise, moving forward with NIL that, in the eyes of the NCAA, would potentially disrupt the collegiate experience?
Well, we have, I think we're just beginning to look at or understand how others may try to, misinterpret that this somehow means that the NCAA is going to a pay-for-play model, right? And so we're going to have to work very hard on the messaging to make sure the public and our student athletes and those prospective student athletes understand that there will be opportunity there, but that opportunity still is as a college student athlete. And so I think we just need to understand those implications. We know that there are so many in certain circles that would say, you know, we should just go to a pay-for-play model. And that we just have to be very clear and consistent that that's not the case. And if you want to be a professional athlete, there are those opportunities to be a professional athlete. And then you can have that experience. But we don't want this idea that, somehow professional athletes and employees become a part of the student-athlete experience. So I think we just have to work really hard to be to make sure that that message is understood, and then that we're coming up with rules that really meet the standards that the Board of Governors and the working group have outlined, which is we want to be clear, we want to be transparent, we want it to look like the regular student experience, we are incredibly, as you mentioned at the outset, the idea that, the entrepreneurial spirit of the regular student also exists in the student athlete. And so we just have to sort of understand what those are, how do we adapt to new technology and new sort of perceptions of, and expectations of today's student athlete.
And as you mentioned, the NCAA is made up of all divisions 1, 2, and 3. Why is it consistent to have, or why is it important to have consistent standards across all those levels of competition?
Yeah, the NCAA governance model is very interesting because we accommodate the 1,100 schools that Gene mentioned, and we do it in ways that allow for them to compete with their peer institutions. So, but we all operate within the same philosophical and principles. So all of which is that, you know, we believe in the educational experience and that athletics is a part of that educational experience. But then within that is our opportunities for those divisions to differentiate themselves within those principles. One point to make really is that all of those are on a national basis. And state regulations like the California law are really problematic as we deal with a nationwide set of competitions, a nationwide set of recruiting, so that, again, it's clear to the student athlete and to his or her family and parents that that they have the same rules and the same opportunities in all places. Within that then come the distinctions that allow for the Big Ten to operate in slightly different ways than other institutions in the NCAA.
And how do you envision that Title IX is going to play into these decisions or the policies moving forward?
Yeah, so gender equity, Title IX, certainly will be a part of the analysis. The working groups has spent time thinking about that. I think, you know, like all of our rules, we envision them to be agnostic in terms of gender and race and all aspects of the spectrum of student athletes that we have, right? So in the sense that gender opportunities will be available through these legislative proposals, they will be available to all. Where Title IX comes into play is to the extent that Ohio State decides that they're going to provide opportunities for one gender, then like all of their other analysis and activities, is to make sure that there is some gender equity, that the gender equity principles are applied there. So I don't know that there's a specific impact that you'll see as much as there is, like all other aspects of the way schools operate, that we will have and make sure that Title IX considerations are applied appropriately.
That's fantastic. Scott, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I know that you've provided a lot of clarity and insight on this topic.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it. And I'm sure I'll see you soon somewhere along the line here.
All right. You all have a good afternoon.
No, thank you, buddy. Thanks. Take care now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Gene, I know you've been waiting until the working group presented their findings to share your personal feelings on name, image, and likeness. So what exactly are your personal thoughts or views on this topic?
You know, I'm glad we're here. You know, we've discussed name, image, and likeness. I was with a colleague the other day. We had discussions in 2002 and 2003, and ended up being tabled. And I'm really glad that we're here. To me, it's the next step in modernizing what we do. It took us a long time to get cost of attendance in play. Took us a long time to get unlimited meals, as crazy as that sounds. And we're able to finally get to a point where we can provide stipends to families for postseason. So our association is like a huge battleship in the middle of the ocean, and you're trying to move it. And because of our diversity, it's sometimes hard to move. And so I'm glad we're here. To me, it's another benefit that we'll be able to provide our student athletes. And it's just a matter of figuring out how we do it the appropriate way, as Scott talked about. Without moving into a professional model or an employer-employee relationship. But I'm certainly, personally, I've always felt that this was a good idea. Now we have a chance to make it happen. And I think that's probably why I was chosen to be one of the co-chairs, because I think it was known, my feelings about this was known.
And Scott touched on this briefly. How, in your eyes, does NIL or any policy changes that come forward different from pay-for-play?
Yeah, so pay-for-play is a direct change in how we operate, to the point where the student-athlete truly becomes an employee. We're taking finances generated and paying them a paycheck. And that's a totally different structure. And the NIL process, a student athlete may have a gift in a particular thing and they create a business, and then a third party compensates them directly for that business. So that's something that we're not controlling. Hopefully, in the model that we set up, we'll be aligned with her or him and educating them about how to actually do that and helping provide guidance. But we're not actually doing it. It's not an employer-employee relationship. I see it fitting in the collegiate model, in my view, in a perfect way, because it will be educational. If someone has a business and they're trying to monetize their business using their name, image, and likeness, that should be an educational experience. We need to help teach them, okay, you need to pay taxes on this. You know, don't worry about the NCAA or worry about the IRS. Let's make sure you do it the right way. Let's talk about, what are your goals with this? How do you ultimately set up some goals, just like in a business? How do you do that? It's a significant difference between, okay, we're paying you to participate and paying you to be an athlete on the field or in the pool or on the court. That employer-employee relationship is a different ballgame. It's not for higher education.
You mentioned briefly taxes, and clearly a lot of college kids aren't tax experts by any means.
Right.
Along with tax education, what other educational pieces do you think we're going to have to provide to student athletes to help work through any NIL opportunities they might have?
Well, I think it's not just them. It's their parents and or other influencers in their lives to help make sure that everybody understands that this is going to impact this young person in a certain way. It just depends on what they're doing. You still have academic responsibilities. You still have sport responsibilities. So let's talk about time management, okay? If you're going to do this, what's the appropriate amount of time that you think you can put into it, and then what's the time of year you think you can do it? So most of our athletes are blessed because they understand time management. That's how they grew up, but now they got to think about it differently. But really just teaching them in their space, depending on what they're doing, if you're going to have a persona that people want to align with, then let's talk about your social media account all the way back to middle school. Maybe you need to clean that up. You know, you're trying to create a brand around a certain niche. So let's just make sure that brand is as clean as it can possibly be, because people want to align with certain values. So let's talk about that. So there's just so many educational things. And just, again, depending upon what that activity is, there'll be other educational things that we'd have to do around it depending upon that activity. But the basic thing is teaching them some business skills, in my view.
You mentioned social media and influencers previously. Those right. are terms that were barely in existence, if not at all, when you first got
right.
here at Ohio
That's
State.
Right.
Why do you think it's important that we future-proof these right. policies?
Well, as I share with my colleagues, and I continue to share, we tend to think about historical behaviors or historical behaviors today. We need to think about 5, 6, 7 years from now. And my grandchildren, I have 7 of them, and they're growing up in a digital space. And the young people that we're recruiting now are digitally oriented. They're not looking at television as much. They're looking at their iPads, and they're looking at their iPhones or whatever device they have. Their average number of devices they have is 3. And so they're connected to a whole different world, and they're worried about the number of followers, the number of likes, and so on and so forth. So to me, that's the space that they would look to monetize. They're going to look at pop-up ads. They're not going to look at, you know, going to a local grocery store and standing in front of that store to do a commercial. They're looking at, in that space, how can I monetize my opportunities in that space? Had an opportunity to sit with an influencer who took off a year from school, student athlete, to go and figure out how could he increase his followers so that he could ultimately monetize the business that he wants to be in. And he's got over 1 million followers.
That's almost as many as me.
I'm sure. You know, you're catching up with your wife.
Yes, absolutely.
You get there eventually. But it's just a different space we need to think about, because that's the behavior that's coming at us. The committee, the working group, we spent a great deal of time trying to learn and understand that. I would share just Google Cameo, Cameo. Just Google it, and you'll see. That's the digital space that celebrities have entered into in order to monetize their name, image, and likeness and their persona. It's an unbelievable site. So there's just a lot of those, and we just need to go to, like we've always said in our athletic department, we go to where our student athletes are. We don't try and get them to come to me. I'm 63 years old. But we go to them and try and understand them, their needs, and what we need to try and create for them to be successful.
It's certainly an exciting time to be working in the collegiate athletic space.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of changes coming down the pipe. I know most of my friends are just most excited about the prospect of college football video games returning. So we'll have to see if that ends up coming into fruition.
That's
but
true.
That does it for another episode of the Gene Smith Podcast. Thank you once again for joining us, Gene. We appreciate your time.
We want to thank Scott Bierby for taking the time to
Absolutely.
Do this as well.
Absolutely. That was really, really great information. Really appreciate everyone who has listened and subscribed thus far. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe and leave us a review wherever you find your favorite podcasts. We will be back with new episodes released on the first Monday of each month. Next month, we will be discussing the work being done here at Ohio State Athletics to help prepare our student athletes for life outside of the competitive arena. For Gene Smith and everyone here at Ohio State Athletics, I am Ben Waite. Thank you, and go Bucks!
Go Bucks!